Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it.
Hello and welcome back. This is Consider This Northumberland, and I'm your host, Robert Washburn, and you're listening to Northumberland 89.7 FM. A record number of people participated in a recent survey about the 2024 Coburg draft budget. 280 residents got online and filled out a survey. It was four times greater than last year. Inflation, high interest rates, grocery prices, and the cost of gas are hammering everyone's wallet. Last fall, Coburg councillors told staff to aim for a 5% increase in the budget. Staff came back with an 8% increase in its draft budget earlier this month. Deputy Mayor Nicole Beattie will talk about closing the gap. She discusses the police budget and its request for officers. And she addresses the priorities identified by all the participants in the budget survey. This includes Centennial Pool, lifeguards at Victoria Beach, and capital expenditures. Beattie also takes on the controversy over stormwater management charges and its move from the tax levy to water bills, a switch that has some residents upset. There still is time to have a say about the 2024 Coburg budget, so have a listen. I am so pleased to have with me once again Deputy Mayor Nicole Beattie. Welcome back to Consider This Northumberland.
Hello, Rob, and a happy belated New Year.
And the same to you. Overall, how would you describe the direction Council's taking at this point in regards to the 2024 budget?
I believe we are being very thoughtful and attentive to the budget process in terms of community engagement, staff recommendations, the different perspectives that council is providing. In all fairness, you know, we've only had the one day of budget deliberations. We typically go through two or three, but had some thorough conversations through budget presentations in December. And I think our first meeting at our standing committee in early January proved to be a very flavorful opportunity. You know, half of that conversation was spent around the police budget and some of our new governance working. So our second session, which will be on January 18th, I believe we'll start getting into the actual debate of some of the bigger budget items.
At this moment, you're dealing with a draft budget. What is the percentage increase that you're looking at right now before all the deliberations are complete?
Mm-hmm. So the staff budget that staff bring forward, you know, doing their due diligence of presenting to council kind of where infrastructure and operations are at. After you take in the new assessment growth, we're looking at a proposed net impact to the tax levy of 8.04%. Need to emphasize that that is what's presented in the draft budget. A little bit higher than what council set a target for, 5% of net impact back in the fall. So obviously council has to have a conversation about where they want that final tax rate to fall.
As you said, the initial 5% was offered back in the fall as a target. How realistic is that now as you're starting to look at the environment that you're working within, the current economy, all the pressures that are coming from both the public and other demands? Is that still reasonable or has it changed?
Targets are targets, right? You know, I would like to be as committed as possible to that target for council to work within. I'm also very sympathetic to the additional cost of living year over year. You know, I'm sure both you and I as taxpayers feel that in our respective lives. You said it best, the pressures of community. You know, we have a lot of different community groups, user groups who all want different things, you know, some core operations and nice services, important services in the municipality. But alone, you know, some really big drivers in the budget are, you know, just union wage increases, gas prices, inflation, insurance, a lot that's out of our control. So it's that balancing of community expectations, economic drivers in the budget, but more importantly too, you know, past council and this council, we've really added on a lot of special projects and strategic projects. So council has to have that conversation of, do we continue to do core as well as strategic? Because if we reduce somewhere, it means a reduced service or a deficit in not a numerical deficit, but a loss somewhere else.
Before we get into the weeds, there was a public consultation and a survey done, and it appears 280 people participated. That's nearly four times more than the last year. What message did you and council take away from those survey results?
One of the nice things that came out of that survey was the percentage of folks who were participating in budget exercise for the very first time. What I took from that very high level analysis provided by our communications team was two things. You know, residents are concerned about quality of service, and that customer service excellence is one of those special projects that council has invested in and continues to invest in. And I really think across the corporation, we're going to see a good return on investment there. Amenities like transit and the library and parks and recreation are obviously not only the most valued, but the most accessed, the most used services of the corporation. So it's that balance, right, of we want all these wonderful things because that's what builds our community. But at the same time, we're very mindful and concerned about increase in taxes. I know a lot of community concerns are really wanting to see more of an investment in emergency services, community protection services. And again, you know, police, fire, and bylaw enforcement come with a cost and are already, you know, some of the more significantly invested areas of the municipality as they should be, as being core community safety services.
Let's explore a little bit of that, because I think that's really important. There were a lot of people who wanted to see more money spent on municipal law enforcement. Mm-hmm. I want to know why you think that is, and how was it reflected in the budget?
Mm-hmm. So municipal law enforcement being specifically bylaw, and then, you know, we have fire protection services, and then we have police. So if your question specifically at municipal law enforcement, I think a lot of that is driven by the concerns we're seeing predominantly in the East End with the encampment, as well as some increase in petty crime. And I think just a general pulse of changing feelings around community safety. And so, you know, community wants to see more enforcement of bylaws. I think the police board, which I sit on, definitely heard that as well too, you know, more police, more patrols. So that's where the police request of the four additional officers came in. What we're seeing in municipal bylaw enforcement is 2.5 additional officers being added. One of those positions would also help with licensing. So that's a revenue generating program for the town. Because in addition to just, you know, community safety and street issue related enforcement, you know, we have our other day-to-day bylaws that just operate a safe community, an efficient community. When we shift over to one priority, we lose the other. So it's, as you know, Rob, it's a whack-a-mole, right? So I think that's where you're going to see the biggest investment is it's really investing in more human resources as a result of the request from different community neighborhoods.
There was a debate at the last budget meeting around policing, and mm-hmm. policing represents, I think, one of the largest portions of the Coburg budget at with an increase of 6.3%. That debate was about whether there should be a hiring of 4 new officers or 6 new officers. And at one point, there was an effort by the mayor to try and get council to support the idea of 6 new officers. Community safety being such a high priority, was council given enough time or put enough thought into what exactly they should be doing around the hiring of officers?
Good question. So there's a few things to unpack there. I think we need to be clear that council can't direct the police board or police on what they do in terms of hiring. That's the jurisdiction and discretion of the police chief and the board budget. So what council can do is send a budget back to the board and to the police services and ask for let's use the word reconsideration. I do know that the mayor, there was a good conversation around a support, not supporting the amendment to go back to the police services shows that you don't prioritize community safety. But I think the general consensus I heard at council was the trust in the police services board. Admittedly, I was not there in December when the decision was made by the board to reduce the request from 6 to 4. But I do sit on the finance committee, and I know that there was a thoughtful and well-researched conversation between the chief and the finance committee and then ultimately the police board. So at the end of the day, I think what council demonstrated was continuing to collaborate and listen to police services board. And as the chief always says, and which I support and would say the same thing, is these requests have to be driven by data. And you know, year over year requests can be reviewed. The one thing that we need to remember is these additional officers are being paid or covered out of the corporate services, the social enterprise revenue. So it's not hitting the tax levy, which in one way say helps the levy, but council and the police board have to be cognizant of the fact that, we have a very robust, innovative, leading edge corporate services with the police services. But we do have to take that into consideration when we're making future decision makings around, as many members of council will say, we all want more, we just don't want to pay for it.
Centennial Pool was another area where the public wants this service maintained. And I know that was a big part of the survey. Also on social media, there's lots of campaigns to keep attention on this service. Is that possible?
The asset itself, well, Centennial Pool, the asset itself is at its lifespan, right? I think what we have the opportunity to do is reimagine what a community pool looks like as part of our overall waterfront plan. What I was hoping would be present as part of these budget deliberations, and I know staff have been working hard on it, but the project's just a little delayed, is the campground is going through an entire design project. And part of that design project will include what it would look like for a shared facility or a shared building with the pool. As you and your listeners probably remember, also back in the fall, council passed a direction to start reimagining what our working relationship community partnership looks like with the Y. So I know I'm giving a roundabout answer, but I think that there's been some strategic decisions made. So there's moving parts. And then based on those decisions, the design, our evolved community partnerships, we're also going to get our non-core asset plan and financing presented to us in the spring of this year, and that will include the Centennial Pool asset. So I think between those three data-driven projects, we're going to have a fulsome picture of what does the pool look like? What's the opportunity along the waterfront? I fully support the pool. We know that it's no longer cost-effective or sustainable in its current operations. But we always know there's an opportunity to reimagine projects. Well, and what I really
appreciate all this process stuff, and forgive me for interrupting you, but let's just keep it simple. This summer, is there going to be a pool that's opened that people can use?
Sure. I think the process is really, really important, because without the process, we jump to conclusions. And what I was just going to say is what I also really appreciate about the community advocacy is their commitment and research to understanding that some community capital fundraising may have to happen in the future. The operation of the pool in its current operation, in its current form, is proposed in the draft budget. So as long as council supports that, I support it, but as long as council supports that line item, then the 2024 Centennial Pool will run again as is. And then, as I was mentioning, during this year, which is one of the reasons I support the pool, for many other reasons, but the fact that I don't want to make a premature decision until we have that full process and data and design to make a decision for the next chapter.
Understood. But I think it's important that listeners do understand that it is in the budget. It is there, and council will be making a decision on that coming up. You mentioned also waterfront plans, and there is some very high needs in the marina in terms of maintenance, a longstanding project for the East Pier. There's some work that has to be done in around the marina itself and the walls and the retaining. Mm-hmm. Where does that project stand within the budget?
Yeah, it's not presented in the capital budget for 2024. We are awaiting, I believe we applied for approximately $18 million between the pier project, the harbor walls, and Monk's Cove from a federal disaster mitigation fund last July. So we are waiting for that in 2023. A lot of that work we committed to would have to happen as a result of grants, or we're looking at debenturing, you know, $20 million-ish project. That said, our asset management plan and a financing plan for those assets, which include the harbor and pier work that you're mentioning, again, we'll come back forward to council in the summer. I feel like we talk about this every year. Admittedly, I wish the last term of council, we had been a bit more proactive on it. I think we were quite conservative with capital projects given the pandemic. So waiting to hear back from capital infrastructure money from the federal government, as well as the completed asset management plan, which will come along with a financing plan this summer.
There is a call from the public to see a fixed route service for buses reinstated. Is this on the table?
It is on the table. It's proposed as a special project in the budget. The fixed route, so a 16 stops on a loop. If I'm remembering it correctly, that loop would operate every hour, Monday to Friday, from 9 to 5, and based on surveying users, those times and days seem to be the most popular. So it would be an additional $175,000 to our current on-demand and wheels transit. But yes, it's definitely in the budget for discussion. And I'd have to admit, Rob, probably one of the biggest items, the pool, transit, and lifeguards, and community safety, I'd have to say, are the four biggest line items that I personally have been meeting with residents and hearing from residents about.
The stormwater management charge has raised concerns from some of the public, and there is a petition by some residents to get this addressed. Now, previously, these were expenses that were part of the overall tax bill. However, they're now being put on the hydro water bill. People are upset with the amount that's being asked to pay. I'm curious. I know this is outside the budget, but at the same time, it does relate to the budget. What is your response to these concerns? And are you willing to consider another model that might bring it back into the tax system? And is that being considered as part of the budget?
It's not being considered as part of the budget, as far as I know yet, unless a member of council brings forward a motion during debate. Whether it's in the tax levy, there's this tension between municipalities having to find alternative revenue sources outside of the tax levy, hence a stormwater management fee. And I know some people perceive it as an additional levy and an enhanced stormwater fee. I support a stormwater fee in principle. Just like parking, just like transit, just like everything, right? Like, everything is well researched. It's presented to you. You make the decision to change and implement. And then we start understanding how this affects the taxpayer, how this affects the resident. So I appreciate that the corporation had the foresight to pause on the fee program, take a step back, reassess, and look at a fair and equitable way to roll out this program. Alternatively, it comes back, you know, we take all the steps back, it comes back into the tax levy. And we as a community have to be prepared to pay for that infrastructure. So I think it's just a matter of an equitable economic plan for the residents, because we have, like a lot of municipalities, we are faced with significant aging infrastructure. We are a growing community. We haven't kept up with the pace of growth from an asset financing point of view. Like everything in life, it comes down to at what cost and how do we fund it.
Are you willing to put it back on the table to reconsider it?
Like indirectly it already is, right? Like staff have taken a step back working on, as you can tell, I'm a process person. I trust in collaboratively working with staff. And so I do look forward to staff coming back with, their rethink on this. But I've also been learning a lot from residents who have been impacted by this, who we didn't hear from during the storm management fee process. And Rob, if there is one thing that I could improve on in this role, is it's fascinating. You know, I personally think we do all of this public engagement on things. But, you know, as a lot of people say, the best form of public engagement is when a decision is made. And then until we actually see it impacting the lives of ratepayers, then do we hear from folks? So I know it's frustrating. I know it's been confusing. But adaptation and changing to address growth and build infrastructure does mean changing the way we do things. But as we're demonstrating, we're listening and we are willing to rethink and adapt.
While there is already some public consultation that has taken place, are you still listening to the public? Can someone still make a case or push for a particular aspect of the budget?
Really, this is going to be the most political thing anyone can say, but as this is also the most genuine thing I can say, I'm always listening. I mean that in the most authentic way possible. If anything, I think this is an opportune time for folks who did participate in the budget survey or are hearing about it for the first time to follow along, because especially by the end of day tomorrow, you're going to get a sense of where your council is at. Even if we got through everything at the end of day tomorrow, it's still the draft budget. And then, as I mentioned, that gives your listeners and the community 2 full weeks to reach out to their council members, review the decisions made by council, and folks can still, engage with, their elected officials, or they can register to speak at the January 31st, meeting. So yes, we're always listening. Never stop lobbying and advocating to your elected officials, because we still have a few more processes before the final ratification would come forward.
Nicole Beattie, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
You're most welcome, Rob. It's always a pleasure.
That was Deputy Mayor Nicole Beattie. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.